Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this August 9th, 2023. Have your host, James J. here, and I am joined by some of our favorite people. We first have Kim Shields from Encourage. Kim, good to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Been too long. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
And thank you for bringing this guest to us.
Yes.
David Stokes is with us, everybody. David, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the time. David, if you don't mind pulling up a little bit, being a close talker for once, you know, it's a one time it's okay to be a close talker. We're going to talk with David in a moment, but first, Kim, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just talk with you a little bit about the Helen Mead Fund and some other things.
Yeah, absolutely. We are so fortunate to have the Helen Mead Fund at Encourage, and I know I've talked a little bit about Helen Mead Fund in the past, just with our zoo programs. And, you know, Helen had a dream, and she loves animals, she loves education, she loves children, and she loved our community, and really wanted to be able to support something at our Wisconsin Rapids Zoo where people could gather, we could host educational events, and the city has also been able to utilize it as a rental income for, you know, people host parties there, yeah. Gatherings, that sort of thing. So it's really been a wonderful asset for our community. But if we look at, you know, kind of backtracking, you know, this was in 2007 when the Helen Zoo House first opened.
Wow.
And that was a great collaborative opportunity and build between Encourage Community Foundation with support from the Helen Mead Fund and the City of Wisconsin Rapids. You know, the house itself was about $150,000 back in 2007. Much more now, and you know, 50% was covered by the city and 50% by the fund at Encourage. So you know, right from the beginning, we've been integral in having the beautiful Helen Zoo House that we do today. And so that fund not only supported the building of that, but also, you know, I've mentioned, and you know, listeners may recall this, but we have different types of funds, and it's an endowed fund. So there's a specific amount that's generated every year. And so based on that, then that's my budget. And so I, you know, look at that and talk with our staff, and it's like, gosh, you know, who are the education providers that people love? David Stokes right here is one of them. And, you know, what's our budget? How much can I afford? How many shows can we have? Who can we bring in? And so that's really fun to be able to do that. And that was all from Helen Mead and her love.
Yeah.
And we're just so fortunate to be able to have the zoo house and to offer these programs for our community.
Yeah. Appreciate everybody behind this too, to make this happen. You know, we know that there's an economic impact that happens. And I know for a lot of people out there, it's a numbers driven thing. So what's the impact it has economically? A good one, a very solid one, and one that we would not have without it. But for us, I think, and not to speak for you, Kim, but we've talked about these kind of things before. It's so much more too about these kids and people and community members. Say a kid, I remember this friend of mine, Tammy. She was young. She goes to a zoo a little north of us. And from that moment on, became in love with animals. She's currently a zoologist in a great zoo in Texas.
Wow.
Doing great things. Like, that's one tiny example.
Yeah.
My daughter, my youngest, Izzy, is a very good example of this, of being at this zoo over here, taking her there to see those lemurs and everything, and her just falling in love with lemurs. Like, she likes cows a little more now, but lemurs are still one of her favorite animals. And Izzy has gone on to work at shelters, work at different, you know, vets and different things. The thing that it can springboard in a kid's brain as far as the love of animals. And we'll get into that with David a little bit too. But just opportunities like that that would not exist without that zoo being right there.
Yeah. I remember taking my kids to the zoo when they were little. And I actually had, we had some wonderful helpers to help set up the chairs today. And I was talking to them because they wanted to go see the lemurs and Trilo from Bear in the Big Blue House. My kids were like, we got to go see Trilo.
Yep.
So we would come over to the zoo and the beautiful butterfly gardens and the master gardeners that do such incredible work, and the staff maintaining the zoo and feeding all the animals and the petting zoo. I mean, there's just so many nice opportunities.
I'm glad you brought up the master gardeners. I don't bring them up nearly enough when it comes to that zoo. Great work that they do
there.
And that staff is so awesome. They are such good people at that place. It's a really great thing. The 2024 Summer Zoo Programs, did you want to touch on that at all?
Sure. So, you know, I talked about, you know, we'll have a little budget. So I'm really excited that, you know, we don't have the schedule of events yet, But we have found that feedback from the parents and families, they are appreciating having a later show offered. So we will try whenever possible to offer that again next year. So we appreciate, you know, David has a later show. We have one at 3:30 today. That's our late mm-hmm. show. Right after, we're pre-recording, sorry, to Radio Land. But, so we have one at 11:30 today and 3:30. So, you know, this is going to air at 3 and people, you know, listen live on WFHR radio as you're driving mm-hmm. over to the zoo and then come join us at 3:30.
She's great at the promoing, isn't she? She's great at it. She's really good at it. You're right on with that, Kim. If people have suggestions or ideas for that 2024 programming, sure. Should they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Just give me a call at Encourage, 715-423-3863. Love to hear your thoughts.
Kim, thanks a lot for the time. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you a little bit more before we wrap up and everything.
Sounds great.
I got to be honest with you and David. I've been looking forward to this since we got the note last Friday that David was going to be in. I have no journalistic integrity with you, sir. I love animals. I love what you do. No hardball questions here. You've got a complete, like, clean slate of who you talk about and do whatever you want. Okay. When I was a kid, I mentioned this about my kids. I grew up in the city in Chicago, and not a lot of animals, you know? Sure. We go to the Brookfield Zoo. I see penguins for the first time. To this day, one of my favorite things in the universe are penguins. And it doesn't happen without seeing them as a city kid, sure. seeing a real animal in person. Sure. Dave, before we get into your act and your program and a lot of that, how did this begin for you?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up as a... in southern Michigan, playing sports, doing all kinds of things like that. Not much outdoors, really. We went camping with my family. I remember my parents being open-minded to just about everything, but we didn't fish. We didn't do a lot of wildlife kinds of things. I didn't really get into this field until I was in college. Hmm. And I went to school in my hometown. I transferred to Michigan State University. Sorry about that, everybody. Nice. And then I got into forestry, and then I found out with forestry, they were basically training me to manage forests. And I thought, well, that wasn't really what I wanted to do. And then they had a new program called Natural Resources and Environmental Education, and it was all about teaching kids. And so I was like, I went to a seminar, and our job in the fall was to develop the Read a Sand County Almanac, which is written by Aldo Leopold from Wisconsin. And we read that book, and then we prepared to take fifth graders on a camping experience in the wintertime. And then I was hooked. I was realizing that kids want to move and make noise, and this was a chance to do that in a focused way. So I changed my major to that, Natural Resources and Environmental Education. Then I went on to get my master's degree in Conservation Education, Wildlife, and in multidisciplinary with the College of Natural Resources, Natural Science, and the College of Education. And I realized it was that my style of what I was presenting, that kids listened to me. Because the first thing was to get their attention. So that's kind of what I do. So.
Thank you for that, David. You kind of answered this next part a little bit, but I just want to dive a little more into it. You come into the field, not late, but maybe a little bit later. And then that you have this field that you enjoy, why go this route with it? You know, there's a number of different things. You could work at shelters, be a veterinarian. Sure. Why go this route?
Well, part of it was the excitement of creating exciting learning situations and having fun and realizing that if you're having fun, chances are they'll want to do it again. And I'm not under an illusion that I do one thing, like your peak experience with penguins, that happens with some people, but not everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if the kids can come back and I can see them over time, it's going to be a better impact of appreciating wildlife and whatever. So, and I found that I brought joy, I was able to bring joy. A friend of mine, I think it was Sandy Queen, said to me that when you die and you go to the afterworld, there's going to be two questions. One is, did you bring joy? Did you find joy? I have found joy in my presentation style and what I do, and I think I bring joy to other people. Because life is a journey. I mean, we can plan for the future, which is, I sometimes don't do that enough, you know, with finances and whatever else, but the future is not guaranteed. And that's something that live in the moment, kids live in the moment. You know, I remember my son when he was little, he's 30, 35 now, and when he was little, he used to tell me, "Dad, you're not looking at me. You're not paying attention." And focused on, you know, to focus on the here and the now. And so I spent a lot of time doing that and kind of accepting kids where they are, children. My brother-in-law would say children, not kids, but And there's no disrespect when I say kids.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, it's a, you know, a chance to share with them the beauty of the natural world. I found out that having live creatures was a way to enhance the learning, mm-hmm. to engage them in a different way. I think if I didn't have animals, I don't think I'd be as popular. But I think it's more than just the animals. You can stand there and hold the creature, but if you can get beyond that.
Yeah.
So I try to use songs, stories, humor, concept facilitators. Mm-hmm. Some people call them gimmicks, like puppets. Mm. And I call them concept facilitators mm-hmm. because
I like
you get a bigger grant if you ask for that.
Yeah.
I want to buy some gimmicks. Cut that out of the budget. So.
Another thing that it seems to me, David, that you're talking about the future, talking about the impact we make and everything. Where can you make the biggest impact? The youth, you know, right. Hitting kids. Adults could use your programs too. I think they would get a lot of enjoyment and knowledge out of it.
Sure.
But boy, if you can hit them young, it not only might spark that interest, but another word you brought up, conservation. Getting young people to care about conservation is
sure.
vital and integral to the future of our planet,
right.
Let alone our animals and us on it and everything.
Right. You have a friend that Mike Walbecker from Philadelphia, and he talks about 8-year-olds, and he said, and I think this works for any age level, especially even younger kids, that 8-year-olds are not supposed to be worriers and warriors. They're not supposed to be the ones turning off the shower, collecting the litter. They're supposed to be watching ants dancing in puddles, you know, those kinds of things. So it's in a matter of the adults have a big job, and a lot of people, especially young people, have a complaint that we haven't done enough to protect the environment,
mm-hmm.
and it's what they're getting in the future. But I still work in what I do. I think my niche is in trying to do the here and the now, plan for the future, but more like take care of what's here, and enjoy the life wildlife that's around us. And I have a number of live animals I use in my shows, which is to enhance the learning. But sometimes they come out; they're not out for that long. Other things are involved too.
You brought up a term that I think is relatable for a lot of us about being in the moment. And I've struggled with this my whole life. And I felt such a kinship when you were talking about that. And it's interesting that the thing that is outside of my kids are in their 20s now. They don't need me as much and everything. So that doesn't keep me in the moment like they used to. But I find like my fur brother, Sammy, my parents' dog, like he does it to me. I'll be rushing around and Sam's right there. And I'm like, nah, I got to pet Sam because I can't help myself. I got to pet him. I love him. And it gets me in the moment. It gets me to stop and think and just enjoy this moment. And I'm doing more of that as I'm going forward, at least trying to.
Sure.
Animals are great for that. They really help you do that. Animals give you a perspective that human beings just can't, I don't feel.
Yeah, I think that's possible, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, especially, these, quote, higher animals, mammals and whatever, like dogs, you say, and they're attentive, always happy to see you. Hmm. Even if they don't feel well, they're usually in they like to be around you. And I like to use the creatures in different ones that people don't like. Oftentimes thought of as the unhuggables, animals that people don't like toads, snakes, spiders, even ticks. I mean, I had Lyme disease years ago, but I don't hate the tick. Mm. It's a concept that, if a child acts out, we attack the behavior, not the child.
Right.
And if a tick acts out, you attack the behavior, not the tick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard, even with, the concerns about West Nile virus and mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, mosquitoes have a place in that they're food for many creatures in the food chain. Bats eat them, birds eat them, fish eat them. And, we like fish fry on Friday nights. Well, the young fish eat mosquito larvae in the water. And so it's one of those things that appreciating, I tell kids if I get a mosquito bites me, I kill the mosquito, but I don't hate the mosquito.
Right.
Because it's you protect yourself, but you appreciate where it comes from. And Leopold used to talk about some of these things, like a watchmaker would take apart a watch and then put it back together, and he'd have one part left over. And he wouldn't throw the part away, even though the watch worked.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it's got to belong somewhere. So just that we don't know where it belongs. And I want to appreciate that there's a lot of people interested in native plants, for instance. I like native plants, but I don't hate non-native plants.
Right.
Because people will say, well, if native is good and non-native is not good, I ask people, how many of us are Native Americans?
Mm-hmm.
Very few.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we have a place to fit in and accept all the things. But
I've never gotten mad at the dog for barking.
Yeah.
It's what a dog does, I mean, you can't really get mad. It's a dog. It's being a dog.
Yeah.
It's just what it does. Yeah. I like that. That's really helpful. You touched on something there. I want to piggyback on the animals that are in your program.
Yeah.
How did you choose these particular animals? And we'll get into the program and what you do there as we go from this.
Okay. Well, I have a number of animals that I like my business is called the Frog Course Nature Education. So I usually have a frog involved, a bullfrog. I had a bullfrog that I got from, well, the first bullfrog I ever got was pretty good size. And it was, females are bigger than the males. Mm. And the I got this frog, and this lady had called me up and said, would you take this bullfrog away from my pond? And I said, well, why do you want to get rid of it? I said, first of all, I said, yes, I'll do that. I said, why do you want to get rid of it? She said, it's eating the baby ducks. And I was like, oh. So I realized that frogs will eat, you know, in the book, the frogs eat, you know, flies. Mm-hmm. But that's, most people don't like flies. So bigger frogs, like bullfrogs, eat bigger things like mice and other frogs. And and so, and plus they're tough. You know, so I use frogs because they're kind of available. They're tough. They're big. They make a cool sound.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, then I had turtles, and I thought, well, people didn't want a turtle anymore. They gave me the turtle. Mm-hmm. So I started collecting that way. And the same with the snakes. Hmm. I have snakes. At one point, I had seven snakes, and then over time, because of age, they died off. And I thought, well, gee, I'm going to phase out snakes in my presentations. Hmm. And then even my wife said, you got to have snakes. And then my friend Louise said, you got to have snakes. So it's like, okay, I'll get a snake. So then I actually purchased a snake from a pet store. And then the lady called me up and said, we have this ball python. We want to, do you want it? You know, my son is going to college. We don't want it anymore. And I was like, sure. So now I have snakes again, but I sort of champion the unhuggables. I mean, people love turtles, but they don't love snapping turtles. Yeah. And they don't really like snakes. They don't like spiders. Mm. But these creatures are alive, and they take care of, you know, many snakes eat mice, which cause problems. So, you know, Bruce Wallace, I think, said if plants and animals all over the earth were to die, humans would die.
Yeah.
If humans were to die, plants and animals would be largely unaffected. You know, so it raises who's most important. So I think we're all in this together.
That's good. I think that we've seen some hope in this subject matter where we've come with bees. Where for our kind of lifetimes, sure, and stuff, bees were kind of, bees, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
In the last 5-10 years or something, we've kind of, hey, by the way, bees, very important.
Sure.
Very, very integral to this whole food chain thing that we have going on. So we've kind of come on the other side of this as a society with frogs, with some of these other things. I think that there's some hope there that that can happen.
Sure. Sure. And like the honeybee, the European honeybee is an exotic bee that much of our agriculture depends on. But there's also a lot of other pollinators that are important, and I think that's catching on to people, that it's, you know, it's an important part of the food chain, and we should connect to that. And
let's tell people what your program's like a little bit, David.
Well, I'm going to try to focus on listening, and have people pay attention at the beginning, and then think about creatures that, you know, I'll probably ask the group, what do you think I brought today, because there'll be some repeat people, and then I use a lot of American Sign Language and motion and to sort of keep the audience engaged. And we'll think about, I have frogs, turtles, snakes, and mice, and fish today. I believe in hands-on learning. I find that, and kids, some kids are interested in book learning, some are interested in song, some are interested in the live hands-on, some are interested in puppets, and it's all different levels. And so we'll try to provide opportunities for all of those learners. And then also I like the idea that parents come along or caregivers come along, because you teach them too. Sometimes they think, the program's for the kid. Well, it's actually for everybody. And if we can model the behavior that we want them to be, you know, to be the change you want to see in the world, that kind of thing, and to have the people, have them participate, be open-minded, you know, look at this. I remember my granddaughter's three now, but when she was like, I think 1.5, and she was still living in Albany, and she had a tick on her arm. And she looked at it and she said, this is pretty exciting. We're not sure what that was.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
More than a tick.
Yeah.
Sounded like a sonic boom.
Yeah. Possibly, you know, she said, a spider. She looked at a spider, and her parents were like, you know, horrified in a sense, but they didn't want to scare her. So they took it off, and then they had her tested or whatever, because ticks are related to spiders. But she was used to the itsy bitsy spider song, and spiders are good, and we catch them and put them outside, and we don't squish them, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. One of the other things that I noticed going to your website, David, and you can go to dwstokes.com to find out more about David and the great work that he's doing. You've got one of my favorite things, facts. Like, yep. I love random facts. I love facts that aren't just household and the facts or anything. Sure. I thought a fun way to kind of wrap up or to let you get going to the program that you've got coming up here in like 5-10 minutes. I don't want to keep you too long. Going over, do you have any, like, off the top of your head, any fun random facts about nature that you want to share? Otherwise, I can use your website here. I don't want to put you on the spot.
You know, when you said facts, and it reminds me of a quote, so I'm not sure if that's appropriate. But Rachel Carson said, if facts are the seeds that later produce knowledge and wisdom, then the impressions of the senses and the emotions are the fertile soil in which the seeds must grow. Mm. And so it's more than facts. You can use the facts to kind of draw people in. You know, the bullfrog is the largest frog. The female is bigger than the male. You can practice language, have them practice language by saying amplexus, metamorphosis, all these big words that are important. But then get beyond that. What does it feel like? It feels like a pickle. The bullfrog feels like a pickle. There's only one way to prove that. And a snake feels like your fingernail. Well, there's only one way to prove that, is to touch it. So I believe in hands-on learning as much. The facts are sort of there because some people think that if you don't have facts, whatever. But I think it's in nature, too, that facts sometimes change. I mean, you find out that this animal lives, well, here's what it does. And then you find out, if you put a mouse in the container with the bullfrog, you find out that bullfrogs eat mice and may not know that. Yeah, you might see something, a great blue heron migrates in the winter, and then you see one in the snow. And you go like, I guess they also can stay here. And what are they eating? Well, if you watch it, then you find out it eats mice in the winter. I'm like, oh, and that's something. So facts can change and are not, they're not solid in stone or whatever. And that's what science is about. Science is becoming, finding out what's more and keep asking questions.
Right. So. Especially that last part, keeping asking questions. Especially with a field like that, with animals, where we're not just discovering new things that animals are doing. Animals are doing new things. Animals are evolving with the planet.
Sure.
It seems like every couple months we have a story come out about some animal we never have heard of that's way at the bottom of the ocean that we've discovered or something like that. Like, I can't think of many cooler things in 2023 that we're still discovering new species on this planet.
Sure.
It's fascinating. It's amazing.
That's cool.
That alone is a cool fact.
Yep.
That's right. There's plenty of great ones on David's website. I'm not going to give them to you. You got to go look them up yourself. Go to dwstokes.com to get those facts. David, I wanted to touch on influences with you a little bit. That was something I wanted to bring up before. I know that you have been an influence on others, and I'm curious of who influenced you to maybe even think about getting into this field that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I think my biggest influence were my parents and my sister. Hmm. My parents kind of open-minded about whatever I wanted to do. My dad was an accountant for his life, worked as a trust officer, was pretty interested in the future, taking care of his family and that kind of thing. But he was also open-minded to whatever I wanted to study, as long as I wanted to study something. And my sister, my big sister, I'm the youngest of four, and the baby of the family. I usually tell kids I'm the big baby, which they think is funny, which I'm not proud of, really. I'm bigger than anybody in the family. But my sister, Sherry, was influences into any kind of ages, really, but especially early childhood. Hmm. And we find out that kids develop the same all over the world up to 7 months, as long as they have good nutrition. Hmm. But from 7 months to 3 years is a critical time. And who's in charge at that time is the parents. And so we try to influence the parents, teach the parents. The idea is that we're teaching the children at the same time we're modeling what you want the parents to do. And so my sister was so good at accepting kids where they're coming from, not to chase after them, to allow them to be who they are. And so that's been a big influence. When I went to college and I met Bob Hinkle, was my major professor, and he just, at one point he said, because we used to team teach, in these fifth grade programs. And then I heard him say to one of my other friends, he says, it's time to untie Stokes's apron strings. And so it was kind of scary to go out by yourself. And then you realize the kids paid attention to me. We did ambulators, which are activities to get from one place to the next. Mm-hmm. So we jumped up and down the trail to pretend we were jumping spiders or something. Yeah. And that kind of thing got the kids focused. And they were right, after I stopped, they were right with me. Hmm. Whereas other people might just, what my friend Billy B calls drag and brag. And just drag the kids down the trail and brag about everything you know. Mm. And walk and talk sometimes works, but it's better to engage them somehow and let them be part of the learning and the teaching process. So
right on.
But those are, he was a big, Michigan State, I got a lot of influence.
Yeah.
I said, I didn't do animal things until I got to college.
Mm.
And so kids that are learning with nature preschools and learning at 7 months old, learning to be outside in nature to be a oh wow type of thing instead of ooh yuck. I mean, approach.
Yeah.
This animal's that's a cool looking bee. That's a instead of, ooh, yuck, protect yourself. You have to be realistic. I mean, you look both ways when you cross the street. Mm. I mean, be realistic, but not everything is out to get us out there. So.
David, thank you so very much for
Thanks
the time,
for having me.
Especially knowing you have these programs today and everything. Thank you so much for putting up with me and my questions and hanging out with our audience and
no
everything.
Questions.
Really do appreciate it. DWStokes.com, the website. Be sure to bookmark it, check out, and find out more about not only David, but the great work that he is doing. And Kim, one more time, if people want to reach you for encourage and other ideas they may have, how can they reach you?
Phone is 715-423-3863 or email us at hello@encouragecf.org.
And be sure, you should be heading over right now to go see David at 3:30 over at the Helen Zoo House. Go check it out, everybody, at 1911 Gaynor Avenue in Wisconsin Rapids. Break a leg. Have a great set of shows, David.
Thank you.
Thank you again for the time.
Thank
we'll have
you.
More Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.